hadn't really been listening.
Do I what?
Believe in luck.
Sure, all surgeons believe in luck.
I don't believe in luck, McPherson repeated. Never did. I always believed in planning.
He gestured to the charts on his wall, then lapsed, staring at them. The charts were large things, 4 feet across, and intricately done in many colors. They were really glorified flow charts, with timetables for technical advances. He had always been proud of them. For instance, in 1967, he had examined the state of 3 areas, diagnostic conceptualization, surgical technology, and microelectronics, and concluded that they would all come together to allow an operation for ADL seizures in July of 1971. They had beaten his estimate by 4 months, but it was still damned accurate.
Damned accurate, he said.
What? Morris said. McPherson shook his head.
Are you tired?
Yes.
I guess we're all tired. Where's Ellis?
Making coffee.
McPherson nodded.
Coffee would be good. He rubbed his eyes, wondering when he would be able to sleep.
Not for a while. Not until they had Benson back. And that could take many hours more, perhaps another day. He looked again at the charts. Everything had been going so well. The electrode implantation 4 months ahead of schedule, computer simulation of behavior almost 9 months ahead. But that, too, was having problems. George and Martha programs were behaving erratically. And he shook his head. Form Q might never get off the ground now, although it was his favorite project, and had always been. Form Q on the flowchart for 1979, with human application beginning in 1986. In 1986, he would be 75 years old, if he was still alive. But he didn't worry about that. It was the idea, the simple idea, that intrigued him. Form Q was the logical outgrowth of all the work at the NPS. It began as a project called Form Quixoticus, because it seemed so impossible. But McPherson felt certain that it would happen, because it was so necessary. For one thing, it was a question of size. For another, a question of expense. A modern electronic computer, say a third-generation IBM digital computer, would cost several million dollars. It drew an enormous amount of power. It consumed space voraciously. Yet the largest computer still had the same number of circuits as the brain of an ant. To make a computer with the capacity of a human brain would require a huge skyscraper. Its energy demands would be the equivalent of a city of 500,000. Obviously, nobody would ever try to build such a computer using current technology. New methods would have to be found, and there wasn't much doubt in McPherson's mind what the methods would be. Living tissues. The theory was simple enough. A computer, like a human brain, was composed of functioning units, little flip-flop cells of one kind or another. The size of those units had shrunk considerably over the years. They would continue to shrink as large-scale integration and other microelectronic techniques improved. Power